I want to thank my guests for making it in this morning. Jesse Ruiz, he's a Democratic candidate for the Attorney General's office. Not alone in that race. We'll talk about that, but first things first. Morning. It's so good to meet you.
Good morning, Tom. Likewise. Great to meet you.
You know, I'd seen your picture, so when you walked in the door, it's like, hey, I know that guy's Jesse Ruiz. But apparently, you're not the only person. You've done really well in endorsements.
I've done okay. You know, we're glad, though the endorsements that matter most are going to be on March 20th, when hopefully I have the greatest number of votes and am elected the Democratic nominee for Attorney General. And then I look forward to having even more time to get around the state and get to know the voters of Illinois even better. Hopefully they get to know me better.
You've literally, you didn't have the escalator. You didn't have the elevator. You climbed the Himalayas of politics one step at a time on your own.
Yeah.
I mean, quite literally, you did this. A son of Mexican immigrants, you were raised in the Roseland Heights neighborhood, Chicago's South Side, and then off you went.
Yeah, no, I've been blessed. I like to say I've had a chance at the American dream. My dad came here as a migrant farm worker with only a third grade education, picked crops all over the U.S. until he landed in Chicago. You know, because of his, and it's not like a very different than a lot of families who work hard so their kids can do better and have a chance at doing better than they did. I got to go down to the University of Illinois, earn my economics degree, and then go on to law school and have a great law practice. But then at the same time, acknowledging that, I got very involved in public service, particularly in the field of public education.
So what drew you to politics? I mean, you're working as an attorney at Drinker, Biddle, and Reith. It's a very well-known law firm. You're there some 20 years.
21 years this past weekend.
Really? And you decide to go into politics and, you know, and now in particular. What caused you to take that jump? I mean, was it just because Lisa Madigan changed, or were you ready at some other point?
That's part of it. And it's the one job, having been around politics and government for the past 19 years on a full-time volunteer basis. I'm still a full-time practicing attorney, but I've been engaged in primarily public education at the city, state, and federal level and boards and commissions. But it's a unique opportunity, obviously, in our country right now. There's, I think our American dream for a lot of, you know, particularly younger Americans, younger Illinoisans, is at risk. Can they go down to Champaign like I did, with $300 in their pocket and come out with only $10,000 of student debt? I understand there's inflation since 1988 when I graduated, but you know that those were the economics at the time, and they're not comparable. And I worry that that's the path to the American dream for a lot of young people, is to be able to get an education, to be able to get the training, whether you choose to go to college or not, to make sure those opportunities are still available, and use this office to make sure we keep those opportunities viable and relevant today, possible today, and level the playing field as much as possible.
And what you're talking about is the path that many students have used at SIU.
Correct.
Which you're going there later today.
Correct.
My understanding.
Visit law students.
I'll go over and lecture there. When just a couple of moments ago, Jesse Ruiz told you he's a Democratic candidate for Attorney General, that he'd worked in education, I would say chairman of the Illinois State Board of Education, and 4 years as vice president of the Chicago Board of Education, and also CEO of the Chicago Public Schools, largest school district in the entire nation. A lot of educational background there. You know, what's interesting, it seems to me that when we've seen people come from outside this political lineage, that it's an awkward transition from private to politics. And I would hold Bruce Rauner up as an example.
Yeah.
I would hold Donald Trump up as an example, that making that transition is difficult for a lot of people, I think.
Yeah, I agree, because some of these folks that you hear say, "Oh, we're going to run government like a business." Well, it's not a business. They're very different, and I've had the opportunity 7 years at the State Board of Education. In fact, Randy Dunn was the first person we hired as our new superintendent of education back in September of 2004. So got to know Randy back then and work with him closely, and have an opportunity to be overseeing a large state agency, you know, that at the time had about a $13 billion budget, and oversaw the 2.1 million P-12 students that were enrolled in public schools across the state at the time. We've dropped since then, unfortunately. We now have fewer students in Illinois. And so I've had the opportunities to be involved and see the differences. Yes, I've only earned a living in the private sector my entire life. But again, I've had this parallel track of doing significant volunteer time. And then for the spring and summers of 2015, actually taking a leave from my law firm and day-to-day basis running the third largest school district in America. So thank goodness I've had those experiences and I know the difference. And I can bring the management skills of a full-time law practice to the office of the Attorney General, which Lisa Madigan always describes as the largest public interest law firm in Illinois. So it is like a large law, and with 375 lawyers, it would be a pretty substantial law firm. So you have to have those management skills, but also realize the mission of government is different.
Oh, a lot of settlements coming in over Madigan's time as Attorney General, too. You know, you see a million here, 600,000 here, 12 million here. You know, it's one of those things that we seem to gloss over in this state.
Yeah.
And when you look at where those settlements come from, it's consumer issues.
Correct.
You know, and I've always thought that interesting. Whenever she first came here and was campaigning for her first term, she was talking about consumer issues. And I think I was a little surprised. I think Attorney General, I think top law enforcement, I think bank robbers, that type of thing, right? But we do have our own form of bank robbing and law enforcement, and that is corruption in the state of Illinois.
Correct.
And we have it. What role does the Attorney General in the state of Illinois have when it comes to dealing with corruption when you're labeled one of the most corrupt states in Illinois?
Well, that is something that
corrupt
we've got to contend.
Corrupt states in the world, I should say.
Yeah, no, and it's something, you know, I don't enjoy hearing jokes about, you know, our state in the context of talking about political corruption, and we need to make sure that we're not at tagline and jokes anymore for that. So we've got some work to do. I mean, we're entitled to honest, open, and transparent government. I'm proud of how we did things at the State Board of Education, where everything was done out of the open. I mean, you know, I remember our last few years there, we were cutting. Unfortunately, the early years we were building, we were getting more and more funding into public education. It was a great time. We were putting record amounts of dollars into early childhood education. We were recognized nationally for that, not for corruption. And so, you know, making sure we enforce the Open Meetings Act, making sure we enforce the Freedom of Information Act so you and your colleagues in journalism and the media can have access to all the information you're entitled to so that you can disseminate it to all your listeners and readers. We have to make sure that we seek further grand jury authority statewide so that we can go after political corruption wherever it may be across our state and set a tone and by example in our office that we don't tolerate any perception of impropriety anywhere. And we have to get rid of that and make sure that people are going into public service to serve, in fact, and not to serve their own interests or enrich themselves.
When I put myself in your position, try to put myself in your shoes right now in the election, I'm going, look at this field. And when you see a big field like that, the vote can get split and you're like, really? I mean, you get unexpected outcomes.
Yeah.
You've got some trepidation about this coming into the primary on March 20th?
No, actually, I view it as an opportunity. Most of us are not well known. There's one former governor in the race. He's going to have a little bit more name recognition than others of us. But we get to introduce ourselves new and fresh and offer. And I think what we're seeing in this country right now is that people are looking for something different. People are looking for folks who have not been traditionally part of the system to come in and serve. And I think I offer a great alternative in that I've got experience in public service. I've never made a living at public service. And I also have the extensive experience in 21 years of private law practice where practical management experience in running a law firm and building and running a law practice, a diverse law practice, that I can go in and run the Attorney General's office, the largest public interest law firm in the state, and also make sure I'm looking out for the interests of, you know, folks like me. That, again, that will be my theme, to make sure we use this office to protect consumers, to protect our environment, to protect access to health care, to, you know, address the opioid crisis that's plaguing our state and our nation, and make sure we still also have open, honest, and transparent government. Those are going to be the priorities in the office, making sure we do all those things that the office has historically done, and Lisa Madigan, who is a friend, has done an exemplary job of protecting consumers. We will continue that work, but there's different challenges. When Lisa came into office, the big challenge at the time was methamphetamines. Thank God her work has helped in that issue. Now we have new issues. Net neutrality, that's under attack. She's filed suit and joined other attorneys general filing suit. Hopefully that'll get addressed in Congress, but we have to make sure that, again, in an information economy and age, access to information is critical to all of us. And so we have to make sure that that remains something that's equitable and fair to all.
All right, here's my diplomatic effort for the day.
Yes.
We'll say that Lisa Madigan has not seen eye to eye with Washington and Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
Some people will label it resist. I don't know what whatever you want to label is. Is that a tradition that you would see, and I use the word tradition loosely, see you continue as an attorney general in Illinois, that, look, we do not like what's going on in Washington, D.C., and our job is to resist?
Well, my job is, and when I hopefully take the oath of office next January, I will swear to uphold the Constitution of the United States and the Constitution of the state of Illinois. And if anyone, be it Washington or from anywhere else, is infringing on our constitutional rights, as the people's lawyer, it's my duty to stand up and protect them and make sure that we protect all our constitutional rights, our rights to health care, our rights to making sure that students, there's Department of Education regulations that were put in place to protect students' ability to challenge, particularly the for-profit college and education industry, for redress if they're not getting the benefit of their bargains. They're getting straddled with big loans and onerous terms and can't challenge those schools. I want to be able to make sure that I'm on the side of consumers and can challenge that.
All right. So one day I'm sitting and I'm talking with a group of lawyers, and they said, give me your driver's license. Right? So There's my driver's license. I hand it to him. He says, you know what this is? It's my driver's license. He says, no, that's a contract. It's a contract with the state of Illinois allowing you to drive. And that's why you sign it. And when you have this, you have the right to drive. And We've worked this out. And he says, and what's interesting is that's the small contract. The big contract you have with government is the Constitution. Is that the way you see it? A binding legal agreement? I thought that was always interesting that he's, you know, this is a contract, and so is the Constitution. It should be looked at that way, and that's what I was hearing while I was listening to you talk.
Yeah. I mean, if you go to a naturalization ceremony, and I've had the honor of going to one in the federal courthouse in Chicago, and people raise their right hand, and they swear to uphold the Constitution. So, in essence, you know, your analogy is, you know, on point. That, you know, most of us who are born here in the United States never have to raise our hand and swear that oath. From time to time, we do if we are sworn into a public office. But otherwise, but it is. It's kind of the binding and, something that I think we lose sight of at times. I think there's a social contract that we all have to each other that we're going to pitch in as fellow Illinoisans, fellow Americans, and do what's best for the greater good. And that's another thing that I think we need to focus on in government, that I always say, and once in a while people say, yeah, it's a really nice guy of you to volunteer your time in public service. I'm like, yeah, I'm doing a good thing, hopefully, but I'm also self-interested. I realize that if every Illinoisan doesn't have the chances I've had in life and can't prosper, then my life is diminished. Literally, my life is diminished. If we don't have a vibrant economy that's going to keep people here in our state as opposed to leaving and looking for alternatives elsewhere, my life is diminished. So that social contract is also important to me, that makes sure that I do all I can. So I've got a senior in high school right now. He's looking to go off to college somewhere, potentially out of state. I want to make sure he has a vibrant state to come home to, because I'd like to grow old with, you know, my children and hopefully maybe one day grandchildren around me like my dad did. When he passed 5 years ago, he had his entire, you know, family around his bedside. I'd like that to be my life.
Well, you know, he's got to be proud of the legacy that you brought to the family.
I can tell you
that for a fact. But what I hear is big picture guy, Constitution, and what I'm hearing from a great many other Democrats is it's an outdated piece of paper. And I'm not going to say large, but still enough to get, I mean, I've literally had people on the air, you're right, saying it's just a piece of paper. And it's been my experience, people who have the legal background that you have, that there's a reverence for the contract, which is kind of a contradiction in terms because it's not a religious document.
Right.
But a legitimate reference to that contract to say, look, man, we got to live by the letter of the law, the spirit of the law. Because we have seen a lot of selective enforcement of the law.
Right.
And if there's one thing that would cause a breakdown in civilization, in my humble opinion, it's selective enforcement of the law.
Right. No, we have to acknowledge that it is it's an ideal, but there are, you know, legal binding ramifications of the document. And then we have, you know, laws and regulations pursuant to the Constitution that are enacted. But, you know, at times we also have to recognize that we update those from time to time. You have court decisions like Brown v. Board, and you have other decisions that, you know, we evolve as a country as well. And so we have to continually address that and make sure it's a living, breathing document as well.
Right.
But it's a binding agreement, but it's also an ideal.
As a Chicago lawyer, Otis McDonald.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Fought for gun rights. And if I let you out of this studio without asking you about gun rights in Illinois, I'm going to be. So what are your thoughts here when Illinois, because we have seen this back and forth, concealed carry, you can't have it, you can't sell it. You've seen this.
Sure.
And you literally, when you look at it, Southern Illinois is one end of the seesaw and Chicago's right. The other end of the seesaw. And there's a big fulcrum going on.
Right.
We call the fulcrum the court and the court decisions here right now. But in Southern Illinois, it is definitely one of the bigger issues.
Sure.
Look, going forward, the victory that people saw here when it came to concealed carry, which was led by a Democrat downstate, Brandon Phelps.
Yep.
Where do you fall in the spectrum?
Every law-abiding citizen should have the right to carry a gun and own a gun. And law-abiding is key. In Chicago, our issue is we got a lot of folks who are not law-abiding, and they should not have guns because they're not using them for their intended purpose. And so that's where I stand. That, you know, I have a lot of friends, particularly my friends at the State Board of Ed, when deer hunting season began, I knew it was their national holiday. They were not going to be at work. And our chief information officer was the gentleman I'm thinking of, Matt Vanover. I'm glad that I had those experiences to learn of other folks and you know, wasn't part of my life on the south side of Chicago, but I respect his rights to and I well acknowledge my constitutional law class and the Second Amendment and respect it. Yeah, you know, we do have the issue in Chicago, and so we have to, and again, for the collective, how can we address this collectively to make sure that if Chicago's, you know, having record murder rates, it impacts all of us.
You know, it's been a pleasure to have you in the studio. Jesse Ruiz is joining us this morning. He is running for the Attorney General's office. Is there seven? Or is there six now?
Well, as of Friday with the court decision that knocked off one of my opponents off the ballot, we're down to seven.
Okay.
He's appealing. He could be back up to eight. But one of seven and hopefully number one on March 20th out of seven. I would hopefully have everybody's support and their vote. They can learn more about me at jesseforillinois.com.
And today, Jesse is going to be visiting law school at SIU there as well. So a big tradition there to
go see my old friend Randy Dunn and Sheila Simon and a law school classmate, Michael Ruiz, who's works at the law school as well.
All right. So you'll
no relation, but Michael's was a couple years ahead of me at the University of Chicago.
All right. Well, best of luck.
Thank you.
And, you know, before you go, try the ribs, okay?
Will do.
Okay.
I don't need a lot of encouragement there.
I can point you to any of a number of great places to go for ribs before you go.
Yeah, anyway, no, thanks.
Because I think the people of Southern Illinois, you've got a name recognition issue. You've got to get down here and share your name. You've got to, you know, kiss babies, shake hands, right? But you've got to let them see you, know you. It's interesting because, you know, I get the privilege of being in the room, and I get a different vibe, I think, from people sometimes. And I think it's great that they get the opportunity to go out and say, this is who I am, this is what I believe in, and look them in the eye.
Yeah.
It's an opportunity that doesn't come often enough for the people of Southern Illinois, because we have this, we're a bunch of rented mules type of mentality. You know, you look at our average income, around 30,000, down from 39 in the last census. You take a look at the unemployment rates, and there's a legitimacy to the way people feel when it gets that respect, because when you look around, you go, you're not, and people feel they're not treated like the rest of the state.
No.
And I know it's not the attorney's job to do that.
No, but I mean, again, that's why I view this office and this opportunity as can we change the dynamic of, you know, and really put emphasis on servant when we talk about public servants and making sure that those who are there are truly there to serve there and, you know, put the emphasis on servant.
On serve.
Yeah.
Yeah. A servant and stewardship.
Yep.
It's not mine, but it is my responsibility to take care of it.
Yeah. No. And not just to your donor base and not to, you know, just the other elected officials who will support you. You know, that's what this is the part I enjoy the most, getting out to talk. Fundraising is not the most enjoyable part of campaigning. I wish there was less emphasis on it.
I ran for office, Williamson County Commissioner. God, I hated asking for money.
I wish we addressed that. And that's something I'd like to address in my time is, you know, we need more funding reform so that, you know, candidates and constituents have more time to spend with each other as opposed to spending time just raising money.
Every once in a while, I read something and gets a burr underneath my saddle and won't stop. George Soros, $16.6 million in lobbying in Washington, $10.6 million in the last quarter of 2017. And I'm wondering, what do you get for $10 million? You know, I spoke with some congressmen. I said, look, you understand, when you say lobbying efforts, it doesn't mean that, you know, that's all a congressman having dinner. A lot of that goes into advertising, social media. Still, I'm uncomfortable with the subject.
Yeah.
At $10.6 million, because if I get $10.6 million out of my pocket and give it to somebody, I bloody well expect to get what I want. You know what I mean?
That's that whole consumer inside me? That's not a donation. That's an investment.
There you go.
And so we need to give everybody the equal ability to invest, and that should be their vote, not their checkbook. So I look forward to trying to do that while I'm Attorney General. Again, I'll be one of six constitutional officers, and I intend to use the bully pulpit to still advocate. And I haven't been on the State Board of Education now for about 7 years, but I'm still going to talk about education because I believe it's the path to the American dream and critical to all of us.